coming up.
I formed a corporation this year and I'm the president. My mother's vice president and my father's secretary.
The corporation as person.
I wanna be a boss, I wanna be a big boss, I wanna boss the world around, I wanna be the biggest boss that ever bossed the world around.
What does it even mean to say that corporations are persons?
My grandmother's treasurer. My uncle's on the board of directors. We got together the first week and they tried to squeeze me out.
Are corporations conscious? Do they remember, reason, experience guilt and joy?
What is the point of calling corporations prison?
I formed a power block with my uncle, and he sent my grandmother to jail.
I wanna be a boss, I wanna be a big boss, I wanna boss the world around, I wanna be the biggest boss that ever bossed the world around.
Should corporations have the same rights to freedom of speech as real persons do?
Our guest is Robert Monks, co-author of Corporate Governance.
I wanna do it right, I wanna do it right away, I wanna
The corporation
do it right
as person.
Right away,
coming up on Philosophy Talk. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of KALW San Francisco.
Continuing conversations that began at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus.
Today, the corporation as person.
Well, Ken, I understand that according to American law, and indeed the law in a lot of the rest of the world, corporations are persons. Fictional persons, or corporate persons, or something like that. There must be two sides to this issue. But I can only see one. This is a really stupid idea. Corporations are not persons. They're corporations. Groups of people in general are not persons. It's almost always a dumb idea to call something by a name that doesn't fit it, that it doesn't deserve. By calling corporations persons, we seem to let a lot of lame brains, including a majority of the Supreme Court, if I may speak disrespectfully, to think that they are persons.
Well, John, I sympathize with your point of view, but it seems to me a bit extreme. I mean, look, groups of people, including corporations, do a number of things that individual people do. They make promises, they tell lies, they incur debt, and things like that. The concept of a corporation and other collection of human beings as fictional persons is a simple way to recognize that fact, that what we do, they do too. Groups of people were issuing statements, true and false, buying buildings and stuff like that long before the law or the Supreme Court came into it explicitly. And with the rise of corporations in the 19th and 20th century, it seemed like a good idea to some people to get clear about the extent to which corporations were and were not like persons. Hence, we get the concept of a fictional person.
Oh, yeah, sure, Ken. I mean, I agree. Groups of people can do things collectively, like issue statements, of the same sort that people can do individually. This is no doubt inevitable and probably a good thing. Corporations go a step further. They're set up so that to shield the liability of the people that make them up in various ways and so forth. And that may be a good idea, too. I agree with all that.
But I guess what you're saying, I think I get your drift, is that that's no reason at all to abuse language and confuse concepts in order just to keep track of those kind of facts you just referred to. We just need to say that groups of people and corporations can make statements, incur debts, sue and get sued, and whatever other things we think it's a good idea for them to be able to do. And we don't really need to bring the concept of a person into it. Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly what I'm saying. As soon as we call corporations person, we have created a metaphor that then runs amok. We create a default assumption that corporations should be treated like persons unless you can invent some reason not to, that you can base on the Constitution or something. The Constitution, a document written long before corporations were of much importance. Indeed, the corporations that existed then were mostly very irritant entities as far as the Founding Fathers were concerned. The Constitution guarantees rights to persons. Applying the word person to non-persons just confuses things.
Well, John, I agree that the phrase corporate person or fictional person or artificial person may not be the linguistically optimal way to handle some certain difficulty. Still, the facts and problems remain however we describe these things. Corporations exist and can do many things that persons can do. And that provides a practical advantage that our country and most countries around the world like to include in the legal structure. So the question still arises, in what way should corporations be treated like persons? And in what way should they be treated as unlike persons? For example, should we put special restrictions on the speech of corporations? That question still comes up.
Well, as a philosopher, that is to say, with someone whose historical understanding and legal understanding is no doubt quite flawed, here's how I understand what's happened. Various states have tried to make laws to the effect that say corporations are not allowed to tell lies and may be sued for doing so, or perhaps are not allowed to buy quite as much time for political purposes as individuals could if they had the money. Then the Supreme Court says, oh, no, you can't do that. The 14th Amendment says that all persons throughout a state must have the same rights. You can't distinguish between the free people and the slave people. So an amendment created as part of ending slavery is abused to prevent the individual states from making reasonable differentiations between the rights of people, real people, human beings, and the ways we wish corporations to be allowed to behave. To repeat my profound philosophical analysis, stupid, stupid, and more stupid.
Well, John, far be it from me to be skeptical about your profound legal, historical, philosophical analyses. But, you know, I would like us to get some expert help with these issues.
Well, we do have an expert. We have Robert Monks, who's going to join us in a few minutes. He's the author of a book called Corpocracy, How CEOs and the Business Roundtable Hijacked the World's Greatest Wealth Machine. I think you can suspect which side he's on.
Well, you know what? And we also want the help of our audience of non-fictional persons. Join the conversation, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917.
But first, our roving philosophical reporter, Jill Replegel, delves even deeper into the legal history of corporate personhood. She files this report.
Everybody makes a mistake once in a while, but I just can't be personally responsible.
Well, maybe you better incorporate the store.
This is archival footage included in a 2003 documentary called The Corporation.
Incorporating would give you the big advantage of what you want right now, limited liability. You start with a group of people who want to invest their money in a company. Then these people apply for a charter as a corporation. Now that corporation operates legally as an individual person.
So how can a corporation be a legal person? Well, a corporation can own property, it can borrow money, buy and sell things. It can sue and be sued. Think BP, Toyota, and all those big banks. Corporations are considered artificial persons. But where did that idea come from?
Part of it is inheritance from England, and part of it is constitutional.
Eric Talley is a law professor at UC Berkeley.
It's been a sort of a creeping evolution of what corporate rights and privileges and responsibilities are.
First, corporations were guaranteed the practical rights needed to run a business. Then the 14th Amendment to the Constitution came along, and that's when things got complicated.
Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Now, the 14th Amendment was designed to guarantee equal rights to former slaves, not to corporations. But a series of court cases changed all that. One in particular was key to the corporation's morph into a person. It was a Supreme Court case involving a railroad company and taxes, and it probably would have been forgotten if not for a note written in the case record.
The clerk for the court at the time had asked the Chief Justice of the court in crafting up the case notes, essentially the introduction to the opinion, what should I be putting in here? I have put in a small squib that says, the issue has been raised as to whether corporations have constitutional rights under the 14th Amendment. The court was of the opinion that they do, and they proceeded to this opinion.
The Chief Justice said the note was fine, even though the court had avoided the 14th Amendment question in the actual case.
And so this head note, drafted by someone that wasn't even a judge and wasn't even the topic of deliberation among the judges, turns out to be this crystallizing moment in which not only is it the case that simple commercial types of rights that have been largely part of, the contracts clause and so forth would apply to corporations, but also a host of other types of civil liberties.
Since then, corporations have gained more and more of the same rights you and I have as real flesh and blood people. The question is, Is there still any difference between us?
Well, this is the big problem with this line of logic, is that it very quickly gives rise to, you know, what a law professor might call a reductio ad absurdum. You can reach quite absurd conclusions by pursuing this line of logic. Why wouldn't it necessarily be the case, if corporations are persons, that corporations shouldn't have the right to vote? Why shouldn't corporations be subject to conscription into the army? It clearly has a stopping point at some point, at which the next proposition is so absurd that no one would sign on to it. And so the hard part is trying to figure out where that stopping point is.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Jill Replogle.
I'm John Perry, and with me is Ken Taylor.
And our guest is Robert Monks. He's a shareholder activist, author of Corpocracy, How CEOs and the Business Roundtable Hijack the World's Greatest Wealth Machine. Robert, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
It's nice to be with you.
Robert, can I call you Bob?
I wish you would.
All right, I will. Bob, briefly, how did you become interested in, or one might even say obsessed by, corporations?
Well, it started about 30 years ago. I was running for office in Maine. I was running for the U.S. Senate. And I woke up in the middle of the night in Brewer, Maine, in a motel, and my eyes were tearing over. And I lifted up the shade, and I looked out, and I saw white foam on the river. When I got up in the morning, I asked the guy who ran the motel, I said, "My God, what's going on here at night? What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, where have you been all your life? Don't you know?" He said, "The paper companies send their stuff down the river every night." And I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "It's all the effluent and all the stuff they can't use." And I said, "Is it good for people?" He said, "Of course it isn't good for people." And, well, it turned out that in running for office is a wonderful thing. You get to meet everybody. And I'd been in business in Maine a long time. I'd sold oil to all of the paper companies. I knew the people who ran them. I knew the political figures. I knew the people who liked to fish. I knew that nobody wanted to have white crap on the Penobscot River. And yet here it was. And so I began to think, what is this thing, the corporation? Are we really sort of part of the Frankensteinian myth? Is there nothing we can do about this thing we've created? Or are we just going to have to sit here and put up with these kinds of intrusion on human welfare?
So no real person wants this stuff in the Penobscot River.
Exactly.
And yet a corporation does, so it happens. So let me ask you this. Ken and I were talking. What do people mean when they say corporations are persons? Are they correct? Is there any reasonable sense in which corporations are persons? Or is it just a confusion?
It's a very dangerous misnomer. As I listened to what you were saying earlier, I recommend to everybody that the film, The Corporation. It's a first-class piece of work. The important thing to remember is that a corporation is not a group of people. It's not a bunch of fellows gathered around. It's nothing to do with that. It is a specific creature of statute. Corporations started with Queen Elizabeth I creating the East India Company in 1599, and all the companies that settled the East Coast of the United States were corporations. They were created for a specific purpose. Corporations have always had in their DNA a sense of accountability to the public good. In recent years, that's become somewhat diluted. But a corporation only has the authority that is specifically given to it by the legislature, which gives it its charter. And therefore, to imply that a corporation has power in the same way that you imply individuals have power or think of individuals as having common law rights is just plain wrong. A corporation is a creature of limited delegated authorities, period. And among those authorities, it's never been delegated the capacity to participate in politics. You all might be amused. A recent novel that Ralph Nader wrote, among other things, has a corporation running for office.
Well, let me just interrupt you there because we're going to go to break. But the movie you mentioned, I take it, is The Corporation, directed by Mark Ashbar, a Canadian,
yes,
2003
Mark
documentary.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Today, we're discussing the corporation as person with shareholder activist and author Robert Monks.
What about that Supreme Court decision that corporations are guaranteed the right of free speech by the Constitution? Bad idea? Really bad idea? Join us by calling toll-free 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917.
Corporations, free speech, plus your calls and emails when Philosophy Talk continues.
British Petroleum,
GE,
Microsoft,
Verizon Wireless,
BMW,
AT&T,
Toyota,
Exxon.
Are corporations really everyday people? They have the right to try to influence our buying habits, but should they have the right to try to influence our voting habits? I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor, and this is Philosophy Talk. The Supreme Court has ruled that corporations have many of the same rights as persons. But are they really persons? If not, where's the line? Please let us know where you stand by calling 1-800-525-9917 or email us at comments@philosophytalk.org. And last but not least, John Perry's already started a provocative blog entry. Go to the blog.philosophytalk.org to comment.
Yes, go read my provocative, completely one-sided and intemperate blog. Our guest is Robert Monks, author of Corpocracy, How CEOs and the Business Roundtable Hijack the World's Greatest Wealth Machine.
So, Bob, I want to... You said that corporations are these limited things chartered for specific purposes. That seems like an old-fashioned view in a certain way of corporations. The Supreme Court doesn't seem to agree with that. It's given them the right to freedom of speech and restricted, you know, ruled unconstitutional certain restrictions on corporate donations. So how is the Supreme Court now thinking of corporations, and where did they go wrong exactly in their thinking?
The Supreme Court... In making the decision in the Citizens United case by 5-4 majority, overruled earlier cases to the contrary. And the reason for this is no vast philosophical concept. It simply has to do with the fact that Sandra Day O'Connor and Souter retired, and they were replaced by two George Bush appointees, and the minority became the majority. And indeed, the person who wrote a dissenting opinion in Austin, which was overruled, wrote the majority opinion here. And so there's nothing judicially relevant about it. I think that I can be clearest in my own mind as to what we're talking about if I consider two individuals who are perhaps the among the greatest of American industrialists who also were great philanthropists. And if I could talk about them for a minute... this is Andrew Carnegie, a person, and this is Andrew Carnegie, a corporation. Andrew Carnegie's a corporation was not above dealing with a labor dispute by sending Pinkertons to Homestead, Pennsylvania, which resulted in violence and death. But he became perhaps one of the greatest philanthropists of all time. So Carnegie, the person, thought in human terms. Carnegie, corporate Carnegie, thought in profit-maximizing terms.
Let me slow you down a bit. Look, you say a corporation is not just a group of people. I grant you that because a corporation can survive the death of any shareholder. And if it is a person, it's a person with a possibly eternal life. I guess there used to be sort of expiring grants and corporate things, but I guess that doesn't go away. But look, doesn't something follow about the rights of corporations just simply from the fact that the individuals who make up the corporation at any given time are doing things that individuals are licensed to do? They're speaking, they're contracting together, they're making promises one to another, so that doesn't something follow about their collective rights from the fact that they have these individual rights? And if not, why not?
The corporation has been legitimated over the last 200 years within a free society because it is in most people's view, the most effective structure by which to allow wealth to be created. So corporations exist for the purpose of creating wealth. And they have, as one of you mentioned earlier, you know, limited liability, and they have the power of bringing together vast amounts of money because people will risk money if they've only got that money at risk. It has very talented people can come in and can become rich because without any money. They can transfer interests in the corporation. So the combination of these various characteristics have made of corporations almost like a shark, almost like a killing machine. They're a wealth machine. So a corporation exists for that particular purpose. It doesn't have any other social objective or social implication. And if you think of a corporation in that limited way, it's possible to see how it is compatible with a democracy. Otherwise, you would never want to think of unelected officials having that much power in over ordinary flesh and blood human beings.
Well, now, if we swallow the analogy or the metaphor of a corporation as a person, and then we take into account what you just said, it seems like the right metaphor would be a cognitively disabled person. That is, a person who is obsessive, compulsive, is unable to evaluate different claims for their allegiance, different values, is insensitive to ordinary human needs and purposes, and is focused simply on one thing, maximization of profit. Such a disabled person might not be entitled to full rights. There might be legal reasons to keep them from certain opportunities. How about that as an idea?
Well, it came out of the film The Corporation, which goes further and says that they're a psychopath.
Right. Yeah. Well, if you compare them to full person, that certainly seems right. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking about the corporation as person, and we'd love to have you join this conversation. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And we have Michael from Richmond on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Michael.
Hello.
What's your comment or question?
Well, I have a little thing, and then I'll get to my real comment. I wanted to say corporations without regulations are like muscles without brains, and we need regulation to align their objectives with society's needs. But the main thing I wanted to say is that this is the first time, as far as I know, in human history when the most powerful members of a society have no stake in its long-term survival. I mean, this is in a way worse than feudalism. Even a king that kills off all his serfs starves with them, whereas a corporation just moves to a different country or something like this. And that's unique in my understanding.
Great thanks point. Thanks great for the point. Comment, Michael. So, Bob, do you really believe corporations have no stake in the survival of our body politic and our society? Do you agree with Michael there?
I think what Michael is saying is that the corporations have no feelings, and they have a very different life cycle than human beings do. Mm. And therefore, their perspective is very different. I mean, just among other things, you can't lock up a corporation. I mean, if for example, one thinks that British Petroleum has committed a crime in the Gulf of Mexico, you can't lock up the British Petroleum. No way to lock up British Petroleum. And they have no soul to save. So corporations are different than people.
I grant you that. But again, I'm going to play at least devil's advocate. I don't know what I really fully believe here. But corporations, it's people who hold corporate offices, who sit on corporate boards, who are the shareholders of corporations. And those people are still people. They're still at least some of them are members of our body politic, of our social network. And as people, you know, they don't just turn into profit. I mean, what about that thought? That it's the people at the bottom of it.
Well, what I was trying to say about Andrew Carnegie a minute ago, and what we have time, go into Bill Gates, is that these are people with dual personalities. They have a corporate personality as they run corporations and seek profit, and they have a human dimension, which is as they become philanthropists. And the thing you have to recognize is not that Carnegie and Gates are schizophrenic or a dual personalities. It's simply that in our society, they're allowed to play different roles. But the role in a corporation is very, very different from that of a person.
We've got more callers on the line. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Or email us at philosophytalk.org. We've got Donald from Mill Valley. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Donald. What's your comment or question?
Hi there. Just was also going to say that I love the show.
Well, that's a good comment. We always welcome that.
Repeat that. I didn't hear it.
just an observation about the whole question of corporations is, to me, just a manifestation of human behavior. I think human beings behave differently as a group versus human beings behaving as individuals. And a corporation really, to me, expresses the way human beings behave as a group. Likewise, a country does things which would be regarded as unacceptable for an individual to do. And I just wanted to make a comment that potentially it's really, we're talking about a moral question, and really a moral, the individual's morality, I think, as time goes by, should be become the thing that leads us rather than this sort of group morality. So really that's the question. It's, to me, it's a construct, and really if as individuals we can apply our own individual morality to the behavior of our country and corporations,
Andrew, I think I agree with you. I think you have a profound point. When you take some similarities, like between people and countries, people have interests, countries have interests, and then you lose track of the fact that it's a metaphor. You get these insane things where we used to be told when we were growing up that it was really important that the last person alive be an American. Right. And, you know, people that it would be a good idea to destroy the world in a second strike and so forth and so on, because it was in America's interest. There's a certain insanity involved in taking the way of thinking of individuals and applying it to groups and then a step further to corporations, at least in my humble opinion.
So, Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think, again, that it's important to understand that corporations' legitimacy in our society is based on the fact that they are wealth generating machines, period. And we can contain them within our society so long as their activities are strictly limited to that which is involved in generating wealth within the rules.
But that's even that is complicated, because right, advocating for oneself, advocating for political candidates who will favor one's position, those are things that will contribute to the generation of wealth. I mean, that's what drives all corporate activity, is they're trying to protect their bottom line, and they do these things because they're trying to protect their bottom line. So I'm not sure quite what that would entail, right? I guess we could regulate them for the public good and the public interest despite their... So I'm not quite sure what your approach would entail about how we should approach them. I mean, should they have this right to advocate for themselves in order to, you know, to associate with one another, to right, in order to more efficiently protect what they're entitled to do, is generate wealth?
Corporations certainly have the power to speak and speak in politically insofar as it has to do with their own business. But they do not have power to participate as citizens. And the difference is profound, because as long as you understand that a corporation can act in the interest of its shareholders to generate profit, you can understand what it is saying and how it is saying it. But when a corporation becomes involved as a citizen,
right,
in the setting of general standards for the society, you then are dealing with a place where the difference between a corporation and a person is so important.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Okay. You're making a nice point, but let me press you just a little bit more. Look, if we do regard corporations as persons not only have privileges and immunities, as the Constitution says, they also have responsibilities and duties and the things they can't do. I, as a person, can't just dump my waste products in the lake and say, too bad for all you guys. So if we regard corporations as persons, doesn't that empower us to make them behave like, you know, decent citizens? At least?
Well, the example you give is a very good one, because in that case, the corporation, much like my paper mill in Maine, can just walk away from it, because one of the things that is bestowed on corporations is limited liability.
Right.
And that's part of the genius of the wealth creation. In effect, we've made a very complicated deal. We have appealed to the greed aspect of human nature and said, yes, we want to have it because we want to have a wealthy society. How the wealth is distributed is a political question, not a corporate question. And so we will take the risk of allowing selfishness to dominate a large portion of our life, and taking the risk that it won't contaminate the decent citizen-oriented activities of individuals.
Right. So you're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking about the nature of corporations as persons with Robert Monk, shareholder, activist, and author. We'd love to have you join this conversation, 1-800-525-9917. And we've got Roberta from Oakland on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Roberta. What's your comment or question?
My comment, I guess it's also a question, is if we're giving corporations personhood and they're allowed to contribute to political campaigns, then we're basically giving those people who run them two votes. They get to vote in their person self, and then as a corporation, they get to make contributions to influence votes, which we know highly influenced by money. So they're going to be getting two opportunities where all its other citizens only get one.
Well, I like the spirit of your question, but of course, corporations don't get to vote, and corporations aren't citizens. Now, that raises a rather, maybe not very interesting, but to me slightly perplexing problem. What does the Constitution say about freedom of speech? It doesn't restrict it to citizens. immigrants, including illegal immigrants, I think have the freedom of speech, and corporations have the freedom of speech, even though they're not citizens and they can't vote. So what are they? Are corporations illegal immigrants? Well, I guess they're not illegal, and they're not immigrants, but they're not citizens either. What are they?
Well, help us out with this one. How does the what's going on in granting free speech to corporations? I mean, how's the court thinking about that even?
The word thinking connotes a positive process.
Well, let me put it a different way. There's this swing voter, Kennedy, who I don't know if he's rational, but he's apparently amenable to argument because he is a swing vote. How did they convince him to go with the 5-4 majority?
Well, he was the guy who wrote the dissenting opinion in Austin. He was just waiting for two more guys to get on the court. He didn't have to be persuaded of anything.
I see.
He just had to be patient. And so he didn't change much of anything from his earlier opinion. So it's kind of sad, really, because the court is not in this instance, giving access to immutable principles or to constitutional veracity. It is simply giving, weight to the political reality of having five people who want to vote one way. That's all.
I think there's something in gearing up for this show and reading research. I gather there have been three phases of the courts thinking about corporate personhood. One is that they're artificial persons and therefore have limited rights. One is that they're natural persons and therefore have more expansive rights because they're natural outgrowths of people cooperating. And the current thing, according to a Law Review article I read, is that they just don't have a theory of what kind of persons corporations are, and they just make this on some non-principled grounds. Is that right? Is that the right understanding?
Well, the theories that you adduce have to do with the application of corporate governance principles as to how corporations should be accountable within themselves. As far as their legal status goes, it is perfectly clear that a corporation is not the same thing as a flesh and blood human being.
Well, that's right. That's obviously true. And we'll have to dig into some consequences of that and whether there's a better way in our next segment. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're discussing corporate personhood with author and shareholder activist Robert Monks.
We've uncovered some problems with the idea that corporations are persons. Still, that idea does some useful work. Might there be a better way of thinking about the relationships between persons, groups of persons, and corporations that would keep us clear-headed and gain the advantage of thinking of corporations this way without the pitfalls?
What corporations are and what corporations are not, when Philosophy Talk continues.
If money is truly all that matters in politics, then perhaps we need to rethink our ideas of corporate personhood. I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor, and our guest is Robert Monks, shareholder, activist, and renowned author. And we've got a lineup of callers on the line. Andrew in San Francisco, welcome to Philosophy Talk. What's your comment or question?
Hi, yes. First of all, let me preempt it by saying I disagree with the decision for various reasons, but here's my point. When looking at corporations, it's already been discussed that they are groups of people with a special interest, generating wealth. How is giving them the right to have a say on political aspects different than the rights already extended to special interest groups and things like unions? And I'll take the answer on the air.
So, Robert, you want to weigh in on that, Bob?
Well, the first sort of distinction with unions, of course, is that in unions there is checkoff, and if you're a shareholder of a corporation, you have no capacity to limit what is being done. And if you're a member of a union, you can just check off and not have your money used for those for political purposes. I think the thing that can be done better is exactly in the area of ownership. The great problem of the huge corporation is that if you have a million owners, you have no owners. And so the sense of the corporation being accountable to anybody has been obscured because the owners have been so mooted. And what needs to happen in order to be able to have the legitimate development of wealth at the same time as accountability in a free society is that the owners of corporations have to assert themselves so as to require that they be run more substantially in the public good.
Well, And, well, the owners of corporations, those are the shareholders in some sense. But perhaps the problem, we've done shows about this kind of issue before. And once we had the suggestion that we need to move from a share owner holder model to a stakeholder model of how to regulate corporations. And the stakeholders in this corporation go beyond the shareholders, the people affected by their actions, their customers, all kinds of people have a stake in what a corporation does. Do you think that would be the right thing, to think of not the owners of the corporation as the shareholders, but anybody who has a stake in the activities of a corporation?
I have no particular brief for shareholders. The problem is different. The problem is a practical one. I spent 30 years trying to get owners to act collectively. Now, the collective action problem is extremely difficult. Somebody with a fractional interest has to take all the chance, spend all the money, and if they win, they only get a percentage of the recovery and everybody else gets a free ride. So that makes it very hard to get even shareholders to do anything. If you want to get customers to do something, you want to get people, employees to do anything, they have to take all the risk and they only get a pro rata share of the return. So it's a loser's game. The only people who got a chance are the shareholders. And the only reason the shareholders have a chance is that in the last 20 years, ownership has been consolidated into a trust form. So there are trusts for the benefit of the teachers of California. There are trusts for the benefit of the public employees of California. And the result is that you have some consolidated ownership, and therefore the collective action problems are minimized.
So
there
so,
isn't any – a well-run corporation is very concerned with its stakeholders.
Let me back up a minute about something we've been kind of taking for granted. I mean, and that's the purpose of a corporation is the creation of wealth. Now, there's all kinds of corporations. I think Stanford is a corporation. I suppose KALW is a corporation. But the goal of Stanford, I mean, it has a mission that isn't just the creation of wealth, or really doesn't involve the creation of wealth. It involves the education of
future wealthy people.
Yeah, education of students. KALW is a public radio station. I don't know if it's in, I guess it's probably not incorporated because it belongs to the Unified School District. But you can imagine a radio station who's had a mission as part of its corporate charter that wasn't the creation of wealth. And my understanding historically is originally when corporations were allowed to come into existence, in exchange for this limited liability that the organizers of the corporation got, they usually had this have some beneficial mission. Was that part of corporate history that we've forgotten about, we've lost track of, except for these kind of special cases? And could that be a basis for differentiating among the kinds of corporations that should be allowed to have free speech?
Endless confusion is possible. There is such a thing as nonprofit corporations. There's such a thing as charitable corporations. We've been talking for the balance of the show about profit-seeking mm-hmm. corporations, which are the preponderant one. Yes, there always was. I mean, in the 19th century, they were limited to purpose. They were limited to an amount of money they could have. They were limited to the amount of time they could exist. But gradually, our federalist system has driven all those standards in a race to the bottom, as everybody wanted to be able to charter corporations. So they said, well, let's, you know, how do you get corporations to charter in your state? By having the least intrusive requirements. So ultimately, we end up with most corporations in Delaware that are very agreeable to the managements of companies because they provide less threat than, say, being incorporated in California.
So Bob, I want to get a clear picture of what you think the best possible future. Or I mean, corporations are going to be around, and they're going to be organized and governed in some way. I'm not quite sure you're hinting at, but I'm going to give you a chance to tell us. If you were a king of the universe and you could rewrite all the laws, what would corporations be like, and how would they be organized, and how would they be governed? Briefly.
I don't even have to be king of the universe. All I have to be is president of the United States.
Okay.
And I would summons into the Roosevelt Room the chairman of the SEC, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the assistant secretary of labor in charge of the pension system, and the head of the SEC. And I would say, gentlemen, we are one government, and we have among our various responsibilities, we as trustees are majority owners of the American companies. And I expect all of you to require that the beneficial owners, the trustees, should act in the public interest, must become activists. They cannot just sit by and let corporate management do whatever they want. It's incumbent on you to take responsibility for the 100 million people for whom you're a trustee. And I've got the Attorney General here to enforce it.
Maybe while you're at it, you should call Joe Biden in and say, Joe, why don't you go back to that rinky-dink sorry excuse for a state they call Delaware and tell them if those 500,000 people want to continue to be a state, they better shape up their laws.
Well, wait a minute, though. I'm confused. So you, in your way of thinking about this, you said there's a... When you refer to we are majority owners of these things and we have a response, who's the we?
Well, I was talking in my guise as the president, and but by we I was saying the employee benefit plans, the ERISA plans, the mutual funds, the bank trusts, the various trust institutions created pursuant to federal law have ownership of a majority of the stock in American companies.
Right. So you basically want to empower the majority owners, which are these institutions and people that they serve, to be more socially active. Is that the thought? That's not a fundamental change in the structure. Is that a fundamental change in the structure of government?
I want to hold them to the responsibility of being trustees, and they're trustees. Let's just say of the employee benefit plans, they're trustees of the working people of America. And these are people who, on average, have another 18 years to work. And I expect the trustees to see that the companies in which they invest behave in such a way so that the beneficiaries can retire not only with money but into a clean, decently civil world, and that they should act like real owners act.
Right. And the fault of it, and if they don't act that way, then does the government do something bad to them?
Yeah, I would think they would go to the various financial institutions who act as trustees, and they would simply say you can't act. I mean, under the ERISA law, if you violate the ERISA law, you can have removed the power to act as a fiduciary under ERISA.
I think we've got time for one last caller. Roberta in Oakland's on the line. Welcome to Rob in Oakland. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Rob.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, taking my answer off the air. My question is, I guess with respect to the recent Supreme Court decision and also, of course, freedom of speech and also maybe freedom of the press, what do you guys think of the rights of a corporation such as the New York Times or maybe the editorial board of the New York Times? I'll take my question off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question. So what do you think of that, Bob? Do media organizations like that, they have different kinds of rights than GM or... BP, right?
Well, the principle is the same. They have the rights of speech as it relates to their business, and their business is the business of gathering news and speaking out and having an opinion, and so they have the rights to speak out and have opinions.
So what if a big multinational corporation, though, that's not in the business news business also owns the New York Times or CBS News or something like that? What happens
Murdoch. Well, you know, you have just created a fine line of work for the next generation of lawyers, because lawyers are capable of making the distinction between subsidiary and parent companies, and they do it all the time. And the answer is the subsidiary company would continue to have those rights, but they do not transfer to the parent company.
Right. So this is all a complicated stew of law. I sort of get your bottom line. I don't know if corporations are going to change for the future. Are you optimistic that the kinds of changes that you think would make corporations better social actors are going to happen, or are you not optimistic?
Well, you know, I you wouldn't continue doing what I'm doing if you needed positive feedback, is all I can say. I do it because I think it's right, but I haven't had much positive feedback.
Are you going to run for senator from Maine again?
No, thank God. I'm 77 years old, so I think that that kind of folly passes by.
I see.
Well, Bob, on that note, I'm going to thank you for joining us. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Thank the two of you very much.
Our guest has been Robert Monks. He's a shareholder activist, author of Corporocracy, How CEOs and the Business Roundtable Hijacked the World's Greatest Wealth Machine. So, John, Bob had strong opinions. What are your opinions? You have strong ones, too.
Oh, my opinions are strongly held, yes. But I think there's an issue we didn't get into. We'll have to do that in a future program, and that's the issue of the relation between free speech and donating money. That kind of lies behind our resentment of giving the corporations the free speech right. It's not just that they can publish brochures. It's that they can put this incredible amount of money into the hopper, and that's a whole other angle of the Supreme Court's point of view.
Well, that's a complicated one anyway, right? Because you don't have to be a corporation to be able to put money in the hopper. You could be a very rich person to put money in the hopper. And if money is speech, if donations are speech, I think that's kind of an odd thing.
But it's a Supreme Court two-step. First, money counts as speech, and second, corporations count as persons. And then we've let
the corporations. Wow, because they have lots of money, and we've let corporations.
And that's not a clear and distinct idea, as Descartes would say. It's not obviously a correct way of thinking of things.
Right, you know, one person, one vote is a good principle, but it seems as though we've abandoned the principle of one person, one voice, because corporations are, you know, really complicated things. But, you know, this conversation continues, as always, on our blog. Actually, it's already started. John has a provocative, controversial blog. I think you should check it out and comment. Go to our blog, theblog.philosophytalk.org, where our motto is cogito ergo blago. I think, therefore I blog.
Yeah, and there's a couple of responses there already. One is a very articulate response who says the problem is the Supreme Court and not the idea that corporations are persons, although I notice this person, when he gets right down to it, says, there's nothing wrong with the idea that corporations are legal entities. Yeah, that's true, but what legal entities? Are they like persons? Well, at any rate, you can download podcasts of our program from our website as well. Now for the final word, we're going to turn to the unlimited liability of Ian Scholes, the 60-second philosopher.
Ian Scholes, if corporations are considered people, what kind of people are they? It was clear enough when I was a kid. They stood for something. Coca-Cola stood for Coca-Cola. Disney stood for wholesome family entertainment and a weird obsession with duck butts. Betty Crocker stood for hearty family food. Warner Brothers made gritty urban dramas and westerns. General Electric made electric stuff. General Motors made cars, LeSabre, Corvette, Le Mans, Firebird, Roadster, dream cars. What's good for General Motors is good for the USA. Today, General Motors is bankrupt and embarrassing, like a beloved uncle who made it rich and then spent all the money on the ponies. Coca-Cola still makes Coke, but it also makes bottled water, sports drinks, Bacardi mixers, Barks Root Beer, Capri Sun, Fanta, Fresca, Hi-C, Minute Maid, Nesty, Odwalla, Tab, A&W, Canada Dry, Schweppes, Dr. Pepper, Fruitopia, and more. So is Coca-Cola the iconic bottle so beloved by those wistful about a gentler time? Or is it a rapacious acquirer of every beverage in the known world? Either way, is that a person you would invite to dinner? Or at least you know he'd bring his own drinks. Disney, besides standing for wholesome family entertainment, is also famous for being cheap and for suing the pants off anybody who violates its trademarks, like a stingy uncle who gives you a nickel on your birthday and then tells you how to spend it. Corporations used to be like uncles and aunties. They didn't come by all the time, but when they did, you knew what to expect. Good old sturdy Calvinator, trusty Studebaker, thanks for the cake, Betty Crocker. Warner Brothers became Time Warner, formerly AOL Time Warner. What the hell was that all about? Supposed to be about synergy, I guess. You could promote Warner Brothers movies in Time Magazine. You could make movies about magazine editors. When corporations merge like that, is it considered the equivalent to two people marrying, or do they become some kind of artificial Siamese twin mutant? Then there are the corporations about which you have absolutely no clue. Accenture, Altria, Agilent, Avalar, Lucent, they sound like discontinued cars or some weird pharmaceutical you see advertised on television or a porn star or an indie rocker. Definitely not somebody you'd want over to the house. Now what happens when you brand yourself into a corner? There's a backlash against fried food these days, so Kentucky Fried Chicken is now trying to call itself KFC. Radio Shack is trying to rebrand itself as The Shack. Court TV has become True TV. Sci-fi has become sci-fi with Y's. So women will like it more, I guess. British Petroleum became BP. Well, you've seen how that worked out. Bad uncle. Left such a mess when he came to the house, it'll take us years to clean up. I gotta go.
Ian Scholes, the only man who can solve a philosophical problem in 60 seconds.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Manila Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University, copyright 2010.
Our executive producer is David Demarest.
Our production coordinator is Devin Strolovich. Our directors of research are Daniel Elstein and Ben Hirsch. Lael Weiss is our webmaster.
Also thanks to Chris Hoff, Merle Kessler, Corey Goldman, and Mark Stone.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University, the Friends of Philosophy Talk, and the members of KALW San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
The conversation continues on our website, philosophytalk.org. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.